Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland, you're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott. Welcome back. Still to come on today's programme, attempts this week to progress the UN-sponsored peace talks on Syria appear to have foundered amid allegations that the main Syrian umbrella opposition group were trying to sabotage negotiations. But with separate negotiations due to take place later this month in Kazakhstan, has the UN's role as a peace broker in the Syrian conflict become irrelevant? The United States is to begin updating its stock of underground atomic bombs as part of its so-called nuclear sponge mission. We'll be taking a closer look at what the nuclear sponge is and why it could prove to be, for the people of five Midwest states, apocalyptic. With less than 2 weeks until the Dutch general election, many commentators are predicting a shift toward far-right populism in the Netherlands following the rise of Geert Wilders' Freedom Party. But has the Wilders phenomenon been overblown, and why is nobody talking about the simultaneous surge in support for the left-leaning pro-Europe parties? And we'll also be speaking about Freddy and Bubbles, who are giving a Viking send-off like no other you have ever seen before. Efforts to reach a United Nations brokered peace deal in Geneva between the opposing sides in the Syrian conflict this week appear to have stalled amid acrimonious accusations that the Syrian rebel groups are trying to sabotage talks. But are the UN's efforts and lack of progress in Geneva further evidence that the international body needs a root and branch reform to help the institution rebuild its reputation and credibility? Our reporter Mark Kirst has been looking at the latest developments.
On Thursday, Maria Zakharova, spokeswoman for the Russian Foreign Ministry, told reporters that the Syrian opposition High Negotiations Committee is trying to sabotage peace talks in Geneva. The committee, which consists of a broad umbrella of Syrian opposition groups, refused to engage in direct talks initiated by the United Nations, leading to growing speculation that the negotiations are becoming a sideshow to more substantive talks due to be held in the Kazakh capital of Astana later this month. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Professor Hans Kochler, President of the International Progress Organization, a body that advises and consults with the United Nations on international relations. Professor Kochler, there have been ongoing efforts in Switzerland this week to try and get talks started, but these appear to have stalled. What's your assessment of the Geneva talks, and are they a sideshow to the more substantive Russian-instigated negotiations that are set to continue in Astana later this month?
I'm not very optimistic about the Geneva negotiations for two particular reasons. First, the framework is on the basis of the United Nations organization. The UN is the sponsor of the meetings, and there is no consensus among the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council on basic issues. And there is in particular no understanding, as at this moment, between Russia and the United States. That's why I think that the UN cannot provide an efficient framework, as the Security Council cannot produce a binding resolution on the basis of Chapter 7, which would require consensus among the permanent members, including the US and Russia. And the second reason, or second aspect, why I think the prospects are rather dim is that there is still no cohesive position, or there is no unified group of the opposition or resistance, and those who are who claim to represent the opposition and the resistance in Geneva are the ones, are the groups based in Saudi Arabia. I think the Astana format has better chances of producing progress because it is sponsored by those powers that are already or that have an influence in Syria on the ground, and that are also, in a certain sense, regional countries. And we have seen that the Astana format was able to produce a framework to monitor the ceasefire, and it has also been able to integrate or to have as participants representatives of those opposition groups who are on the ground in Syria, I mean, who are actively involved in the, or who are part of the fighting units and who are not somewhere away based in some other countries and would not have an influence on those who fight. Because if ever there is a chance for peace in negotiations, those have to be undertaken between the warring parties. parties.
And earlier this week, you gave a lecture in Berlin in which you said the transition in Syria from general civil unrest to full-blown civil war was the result of what you describe as, quotes, covert foreign actors. Specifically, who were you referring to there?
It is mainly certain countries in the region, plus countries from outside the region, such as the United States. And as far as the regional countries are concerned, this includes certainly some Gulf countries, Saudi Arabia, and also Turkey, in cooperation with the United States. And understandably, I mean, it's quite logical that in at the beginning of a civil conflict, it is much more difficult to reach or to contain such a conflict if each of the conflicting parties is getting or is knowing that they will have support from outside in case they are facing any difficulties on the ground in the country. So these interventions or this secret support, it was mostly a secret support, have made the conflict much more serious and have made it much more difficult to contain it. But now, 6 years after the fighting has started, the situation is that those countries that have been intervening have a responsibility now to bring the warring factions to the negotiating table. And they are in a position to do that. They can exercise influence on those groups which they have initially supported.
And you've suggested the trilateral mechanism between Russia, Turkey and Iran might offer a model of how other global conflicts may be resolved in future. But is that not simply going to undermine the credibility and indeed the relevance of the United Nations?
It may undermine the credibility of the United Nations, but I would say this is not the fault of those groups in the regions that take the initiative at peace negotiations. The problem is structural within the United Nations organization. The UN can only be effective on issues of conflict resolution if there is unanimity or consensus among the five permanent members. At the moment, there is no such consensus, particularly because in previous years, one or the other of the permanent members just did go it alone, so to speak, and did not act with the authorization of the Security Council. And in such a situation, when the World Organization is not able to decide in the form of coercive resolutions about a conflict or a dispute, it is only natural that the countries of the region who have a stake in the situation and who have also a concrete influence on the warring parties, that they become aware of their responsibility and that they negotiate, first of all, among themselves how to define their interests in a particular conflict, and secondly, they take an influence, exercise an influence on the local parties to negotiate with the mediation or facilitation of those regional countries. And that is what happened in Astana, and that is what I would call a form of realpolitik, and I would also say of responsible realpolitik, because those who have a stake and who have also exercised influence on one or the other groups at the same time have a responsibility to help those fighting groups to negotiate and to reach a compromise.
You've suggested the UN system of collective security has proven, quotes, dysfunctional. Is the UN Security Council still fit for purpose, or does the international community need to completely reform the long-established institutions of the United Nations?
I think the system is outdated. Now, in the year 2017, the global power balance is different from the one that existed in 1945. But the structure of the United Nations still somehow represents the power balance of a bygone era. Now it would be time for the United Nations to reform the charter. However, the prospects of such a reform are dim because any changes to the charter, which would be required, any changes do need the consent of exactly those five powers who have the status of permanent members, who have had that status since 1945.
Professor Cochler, a very interesting contribution. Many thanks for speaking to us on World in Focus.
You're welcome.
Radio Sputnik. We speak your language.
Find us at SputnikNews.com.